So,
okay, so I was asked to share my testimony a little bit. So, I'm the oldest of 13 children. My dad and mom were raised in Bowling Green, Missouri, and they moved to Michigan, and that's where I was born, in Michigan. And from Michigan, we moved to south central Indiana, and lived there for a couple years. And when I was 5 years old, we moved to southeast Indiana, which is Switzerland County, Indiana, Vivi, Indiana. That's where I was raised at. I wasn't born there, but I was the oldest of 13 children. Lived there most of my life from 5 years old until even today, I still live there in the same county. As years went on, we had splits in the church, one split after another. 1995 was the first year that we had a split in the church. And so that really hurt me because I lost most of my cousins. I got over 300 cousins, and most of them were with the other church splits. And then we were just by ourselves in a family in 1995. And then we fellowshiped with two other churches, one in Bern, Indiana, one in Zanesville, Ohio. And then we fellowshiped together for several years there. And then in 2004, we split from them. And by 2006, we were by ourselves. There was about 15 families from 2006 all the way up until 2012 till I left. But in 2006, so there was no other ladies for me to ask. I had dated several girls over the years, just, you know, a month at a time or so until we had a split. And usually we split up because of church splits. And so one thing led to another, and I tried to date girls in another community that we were fellowshipping with, and then it didn't work out because their parents disagreed with my parents, and we split up, and just one thing after another. So I was a very hurt young man wanting to have a family life. My first love was when I was 17 years old, and I thought I was really going to get married to this girl, and I broke up with her. She broke up with me, and it didn't work out. So my heart just hardened so much more over the years that I became a very hard man when it came to having a relationship with a girl. In 2009, I tried to date a girl outside the community that was not in fellowship with us, but they were in Davis County, Indiana, and they were kind of separated also from the other churches, but they were way more modern than what we were. They had indoor bathrooms, they had kitchen cabinets. We didn't have that stuff. They had gas lanterns. We didn't have that stuff. They had so many things. And in 2009, we were by ourselves. We were about 15 families. We didn't fellowship with anybody else. And we prided ourselves that we knew better, way more than anybody else knew. And everybody else is wrong. And so if the group over there didn't shun the people that we shunned, then we would shun them. So shunning is basically the gospel in the Amish community, especially where I come from. Shunning is the gospel. I mean, if you don't excommunicate that person the way we do, then you're going to be excommunicated too. And so shunning was a big thing. The first thing when we wanted to talk to a community, let's say, and maybe work out a relationship with them to have fellowship, we would ask where they stand on excommunication and shunning. How important is that to them? That's what we would ask. And so one thing led to another, and I decided my sister had a pen pal out in Davis County and said that her pen pal has a sister that's single, and I might be able to talk to her. So I talked to this young lady, and she was a nice young lady, and I had tried to be very religious and very right with the church and do everything just proper with the church and everything. What happened? Did something go off? Or are you blocking it? And so anyways, I tried to do everything to exactly what the church rules is. So instead of just asking this girl out and telling her that I'd ask her out, I told her, said, okay, I'd like to ask you out. Would you be willing? She says, yes. I said, well, I got to go back now and ask the ministers at the church, at my church, to see if it's okay. And they do that. So I went back, and the ministers all said, well, they can't just say no. They'd have to think about it. And so I'm like, yes, maybe God is on my side. So I dated for a couple weeks, and finally, a couple weeks went by, a member of the church came, that was not even a minister, a member of the church came and said, hey, you probably heard all this on the DVD, didn't you? And a member of the church came and said, I couldn't allow you to, I'm hearing that you're dating a girl outside the community. I said, yeah, I am, because the preachers all said they would have to think about it and pray about it, so I'm probably going to do it. He said, well, I can't allow that. I said, why is that? He said, because you're taking it in your own hands, and you're doing it out of your own, not letting God do the work. And I really got frustrated and aggravated and hurt at that time. I said, letting God do the work? How do you let God do the work then? How do you go about it to ask a girl? How do you go about it to seek for a wife? So I said, let me ask you a question. I said, do you feel like that God brought you your wife? He said, yes. I said, then prove that to me. See, I was lost at that time, but I still couldn't understand how you're supposed to go about it to answer no. I said, well, I'm not going to listen to you. I'm going to wait till the preachers say no. Then I'll decide if I can go on or not. I'll let them decide first. Well, the funny thing is, and you got to remember, this is what I'm going to say here, because at the end of my testimony, I'll explain to you how great God is. I asked that guy, so I said, and being very sarcastic, I asked that guy, I said, so you're telling me that God is going to bring me a woman and she's going to drop right down to my driveway and going to come walking up and going to say, hey, I'm supposed to marry you. Is that what you're telling me that's going to happen? Well, no. I said, exactly. So how do you go about it? So I was frustrated and upset, and I broke up with the girl. And from 2009 to 2012, I was a very troubled man. I would go to friend's house, non-anonymous friend's house, and just hang out and eat dinner with him. There was an English friend of mine that invited me to come on Tuesday nights and watch a show called Amish Out of Order. Who always heard about that show? I was very against that to start with. I said, nah, them guys are just falling off, non-believers. They're of the world. They're the devil. I don't want to listen to it. And he said, I think you should. I think you should come and just listen to that. I said, really? He said, yeah. So I went on a Tuesday night. And I went again on Tuesday night. And I went again on Tuesday night. I watched that pretty much that whole season in 2012 on Amish Out of Order. Joe was on there, which I don't really remember watching him on there, but I knew he was on there. But the main host on that show was Mose Gingrich. Mose Gingrich was out of Columbia, Missouri. And that got me to thinking, just by watching that show, it got me to thinking about leaving, although I was like, no, I'm never going to leave. And the people that took me there told me, said, have you ever thought about leaving? I said, yeah. But I never will, because I was born Amish, I was raised Amish, and I'll die Amish. 6 months later, I left the Amish. But I contacted Mose Gingrich on that show. I had my friend's computer laptop. I had my straw hat, my Amish clothes. I was out in the yard in a lawn chair on a laptop messaging this guy. But I didn't want them to see what I'm doing and who I'm messaging, because I was so scared that I'm even attempting to talk to an ex-Amish person. And when I talked to this Mose Gingrich, when he messaged back, I would call my friends and say, did he message back? And he said, yeah, they finally did. So I went over there one Tuesday night again, and I looked at the message. He says, okay, he doesn't do this, but there's a guy that does this for a living in Ohio. I'm like, for a living in Ohio? A guy that does this for a living in Ohio? He's got to be of the devil, because there's nobody that can do that, tearing families apart, because that's how we viewed the ex-Amish that left the Amish. When they helped someone out, we viewed them basically as the worst of the worst. But I kept his number, and I had a cell phone at this time. This was in the summer of 2012. I had a cell phone at this time. In May of 2012, two of my siblings got married, and they married brothers. Two of my sisters got married, they married brothers, and one of those brothers was my best friend. And so I wanted to be married too. I wanted to have a family. And I was just troubled that whole year. I was either going to commit suicide or leave the Amish, because I had suicidal thoughts all the time in my mind, because I was done with life. There was church things going on. I felt unwanted. I felt my voice was not being heard. I tried so hard to date that girl in Davis County 3 years prior to that. And I tried to plead with the ministers, like, can we not at least try? Nope. Then I finally got Joe Kime's number. And one night I got enough nerve to call him, and I called him up, and I was shaking like this. I was sitting in my friend's truck, because I didn't want them to hear what I'm talking about. I was shaking like this, talking to an ex-Amish guy. And Joe was just so calm through all this, and that's what I always appreciate, the fact, how he responded to me and how he listened to me, and someone was finally listening to me. And that's what spoke to me. Later I realized that's what really spoke to me. Someone was listening to me. And I shared the story about the girl that I dated in Davis County, and said, that just ain't right. I'm like, well, I think it was the right thing to do, you know, because I thought it was the right thing that we did, just break up with him. I was believing that. But he said, that's just not right. And it spoke to me. I'd attempted to leave several times. Two or three times I said, okay, I'm going to leave that night. I want somebody to come down here and do this. And I said, I want to sell my place. He said, well, you know, if God calls you, you can't just go back. You can't just wait on your places. You have to leave. I'm like, I don't want to hear anything more about God. That's fine. I'll go whenever I'm ready. Well, one thing led to another. I finally went on an out west trip with two of my siblings and sisters that got married. We went on an out west trip. We were gone for 21 days, and then we came back. And I was just very troubled, and I, very miserable life. That didn't even satisfy me going out there. I was just like very miserable. And I knew that I'm going to have to eventually leave. And But I always thought, I'll come back. And finally, on December the 21st, I called Joe and said, I'm ready, I'm done. And he told me all along, now give me like 3 days if you can. Just give me like 3 days notice. And when I tried, I couldn't do it. Finally, it was like on the September 21st, and we had my dad's birthday party the night before, and that was the last meal I had with my family. And then I remember that meal so well because I remember I knew I was leaving. That next day I called Joe and said, I am done. So pick somebody up. Have somebody come down and pick me up. I'm done. So I told you like 3 days. I said, I know. I'll wait, whatever it takes. Get somebody. I want to get out of here. And it was December 22nd, 2012, on a Saturday night, 9:30 night. Finally, a young man came down to pick me up. And here I was with a full-grown beard, and I had two duffel bags, and my German Bible and my social security number, my birth certificate, stuff that I knew I needed. And the young man that was 19 years old that picked me up, he was an ex-Amish guy, he drove all the way from Ashland all the way down to Indiana and picked me up. And his story is, he said, when I came to pick you up, he said, I looked out the window at the end of the driveway there where I was staying. He says, I knew I was supposed to pick up an Amish boy, but he said, when I saw you, you looked like an old Amish bishop. And he said, I had 1 foot on the brake and 1 foot on the gas, because I was going to take off. So, but I jumped in the car and we left, and I was scared to death. I had the slightest idea what my future was. I had the slightest idea. I was doing something what I thought was so wrong that I'm literally going to hell for what I'm doing. And at that point in time, I was going to hell. And it was that morning we caught the Joe Kimes place at 3 o'clock in the morning. And I woke up the next morning and I already had my beard trimmed off that morning, and I didn't trust to take it all the way off because it felt too odd. I hated my beard. I was so glad to get rid of it. But I felt guilty that I cut it. Joe never saw me with my full beard. But anyways, he talked me into going to church that morning. I was like, nah, I'm good. I'm fine. I'm not going to church. It was a Sunday morning. I went to church, felt convicted that day. The next day was on a Monday. And he witnessed to me, for that Sunday and that Monday. I sat in his office, and he would explain Romans 3:23 and Romans 6:23, and he would explain that pen thing, and then explain it to him and illustrate how we fall short the glory of God. And it wasn't finally until I would argue with him. I shared a little bit about this before, how I argued with him about, not argue with him, but I would like get frustrated. Well, this is what we got to do, and he would keep going back to the Bible and relating to the Bible. Now, just read this, Samuel, just read this. So I would read it, and when I read Colossians 2:14, blotting out the handwriting which was against us and contrary to us and nailing it to the cross, when I read that, the light bulb went on just that, like that. But then again, I was a little unsure if I'm saved. I know I got saved at that moment. I've never had that feeling. But the Amish thing was still in me. A week later, we went to a church to do a presentation. That pastor said, are you saved? I said, I think I am. He said, oh, no, either you are or you're not. I'm like, oh, okay. So he took me to 1 John 5:13. And I read that, and to this day, I have never doubted it. To this day, I've never doubted it. And you know what? My wife, I met her finally on the phone in November for the first time. On the phone, we talked, and we sent selfies of each other. Finally, I started getting feelings for her, and I asked the lady back home that was... Her and her husband were talking to me a lot and was encouraging me. I told the lady, I said, I'm finally getting feelings of this young lady. And she says, marry her. I said, I can't just marry her. She says, why not? I said, well, because that's what I was taught. You got to date for 6 months, 2 years. She said, that's what you were taught. But it's between you, her, and God. And you know what? First time I met my wife physically for the first time, laid eyes up on her with a month later. I had proposed to her over the phone the week of Thanksgiving to marry me. Never seen her before. Guess where I saw her for the first time? In a driveway. And I already had proposed to her, and she said yes. So don't ever underestimate the power of God. It was not in my driveway, but it was in a driveway when I first laid eyes upon her. And it wasn't until about a year and a half, 2 years later, I realized that. I'm like, wow, God, you have a sense of humor. I'll never doubt you again. And to this day, we now have 5 children. Got the 6 on the way. So we got, this is Polly. Her testimony is in Jumping the Fence book and in the DVD. And then this is Rebecca. She's 5 and a half years old. And this is our second oldest, Malachi. He's 4.5 years old. Malachi means messenger to my people.
That means.
This is Loretta. She's 3 years old. And then this is Joanna. She's the second youngest. She's 2 years old. And this is Jethro, named after Moses' father-in-law. Jethro was 9 months old, and he just started walking. He's walking all over. But that's my testimony. I thank you guys so much.